Jiva Rasabhi. By millions and millions of living entities. Akirnaha. Filled up or spread over. Andakosha. The whole universe. Angripaha. Like a tree. Mahan. Very, very great. Tat mulat vat. Because of being the root of this tree. Achyuta isya. Worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva. Of all. Jiva atma. Living entities. Tarpanam. Satisfaction. Translation: the entire universe, which is full of living entities, is like a tree whose root is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Achyuta Krishna, therefore, simply by worshipping Lord Krishna, one can worship all living entities. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, text 8, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva vajanti mam buddha bhava samam vitaha. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. People are very much anxious to give service to other living entities, especially to the poor. But although they have manufactured many ways to give such help, actually they are expert in killing the poor living entities. This sort of service or mercy is not recommended in the Vedic wisdom. As stated in a previous verse, it has been decided, niruktam, by expert saintly persons that Krishna is the root of everything and that worshipping Krishna is worshipping everyone. Just as supplying water to the root of a tree means satisfying all of its branches and twigs. Another point is that this universe is full of living entities from top to bottom. On every planet, jiva, rasa, bhir, akirna. Modern scientists and so-called scholars think that there are no living entities on planets other than this one. Recently, they have said they have gone to the moon but did not find any living entities there. But Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures do not agree with this foolish conception. There are living entities everywhere, not only one or two, but jiva rasa bihi, many millions of living entities. Even on the sun, there are living entities, although it is a fiery planet. The chief living entity on the sun is called Vivaswan. Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Aham Aviyam. All the different planets are filled with different types of living entities according to different living conditions. To suggest that only this planet is filled with living entities and that others are vacant is foolish. This betrays a lack of real knowledge. Interesting. So, jiva rasabir akirna anna kushang ripo mahan tan mulatvar achuteja sarva jivat ma tarpanam. So, Omagana Timadandasha, Dananjana Shilakaya Chakshurin Minitam Gena Tasmai Shi Gurve Namaha. So, of course, recently, within the last 30, 40 years, the scientists have been sending different vehicles, supposedly, to different planets, like there's the Mars rover, and even they sent one vehicle that went around Pluto recently. You may not know what Pluto is, but Pluto used to be a planet. And now it's not a planet anymore because it's too small. Anyway, scientists have redefined what's a planet and what's not a planet in the solar system. In any case, they haven't really seen any living entities anywhere. I mean, sometimes people who are expert in photography, they look at a picture and they see the outline of some animal. But actually, the scientists have not seen any living entity anywhere in the universe. So what's happening? Christian says there's living entities everywhere. So why are they not seeing living entities in the different planets? We're supposing, of course, that they're going to the planets, but in any case, let's just take that hypothetically, that they're going to the planets. And the reason being is that living entities are more subtle. Living entities are made from different substances than living entities on this planet. For example, on this planet, the Earth planet, all life is carbon-based. Like if you're talking about anybody studied organic chemistry, it's all based on carbon. Carbon and other elements. So, in other planets, life could be based on different elements, or even elements the scientists have not discovered, because they keep discovering new elements anyway. Or it could be more subtle. But in any case, there's living entities everywhere. I mean, for example, many hundreds of years ago, before the microscope was discovered, everybody knows what a microscope is? There's this person, what is his name? Lou Holmkolb or something like that from Europe. He discovered a microscope, or built a microscope. He didn't actually discover it. He built it. And he discovered that there were microbes everywhere. But before that, people had so many different theories of disease. I mean, even here in Fiji, of course, you got these witch doctors. And they say, you're sick. And even the witch doctors went to New Zealand. That's why they're banning practically everybody who looks like a sadhu from New Zealand right now. Because the witch doctors went to New Zealand, several people died, and they collected money and everything like that. So there's all this superstition. I mean, India, of course, is filled with superstition. I mean, many countries are filled with superstition. That disease comes, I mean, for example, there's the superstition if you sneeze, the demons will come and possess you. You know, unless someone says, God bless you. That's where God bless you came from. You understand? Because they're, you know, achoo, oh, your soul's left your body. Has to come back. So, so many different superstitions. Or in India, every time you yawn, you're supposed to snap your fingers. And you see that sometimes people snap their fingers when they're yawning. And the first time I saw that, I thought someone was extremely hungry. Because I didn't understand that particular ritual. So anyway, many, many years ago, you had the superstition that diseases were caused by some demons somewhere. And then, when this person had the microscope, he discovered that there were things like bacteria and viruses. Of course, viruses are too small to see, but later on they saw viruses. So they discovered that there were all these things. Just like, if you get sick, let's say right now I have a little cold, it's obvious some kid gave it to me here in Fiji. You know, I was doing high five with everybody. So it's obvious, you know, some germ came from some little kid. He gave me his blessings, or she gave me her blessings. And then, you know, you have a little cold. That's the germ theory of disease. And therefore, science has actually made a lot of progress based upon this particular principle, especially with vaccines. They can prevent certain diseases. I know devotees sometimes, they're really against vaccines. At least, maybe not here. But in other countries, they have this philosophy that vaccines cause brain damage or something like that. And they get real paranoid about it. It's this whole paranoid thing. But, you know, but through vaccination, polio has been more or less eradicated, hasn't it, doctor? Do you have any polio here in Fiji? No. And there's a little bit, just a spot in India right now, because these are people who didn't get vaccinated. But when I was young, so many people had polio, they were walking around with the braces on their legs. Does anyone remember that? Now you don't see anyone. basically because of that. Because they understood there were these little creatures called bacteria and viruses that cause disease. But before that, nobody saw them. So they coming up with so many speculative points. So as soon as they had the right instruments, the point I'm making, as soon as they had the right instruments, they could perceive them. And so because the scientists don't have the right instruments, they're not able to perceive the living entities on other planets. It's very easy. I'm just making that comparison. You know, 500 years ago, they didn't know anything about bacteria. And literally, there's billions, trillions, quadrillions of living entities in the air in this temple room. It's like sometimes I pay obeisances near this carpet and I can smell the mold. You understand what mold is? Actually, mold can be extremely toxic. Kills people. There's this black mold and all sorts of different types of mold. And that's a living entity, the mold. It's like, it's a fungus. It's like mushrooms, but you don't eat that like you would eat normal mushrooms. So there's living entities everywhere. And if you put a Petri dish up, does anyone know what a Petri dish is? No. Anyway, let me explain what it is, since none of you are educated, except for the doctor here. It has this substance called agar-agar in it. You've heard about that, doctor? He's the only one who's educated in the whole room. So we did that in our science class. You put that on there and just leave it out in the air, and things grow on it. I mean, all these microbes, they sort of, you can grow, of course, penicillin on it too, right? And so many other things. That's how penicillin was discovered by mistake, because something grew on the agar-agar. And they gave it to someone, and it was able to get rid of certain bacteria. So in other words, there's so many living entities, none of us are perceiving it in this room at right now, but they're here. And there's other things happening in the room too that you're not perceiving because you don't have the right senses to perceive them. There's electromagnetic signals, like telephone signals and television signals and all sorts of vibrations happening in the air. And you think the air is just clear, but actually so many things are here. Just in this little space, so many microbes and creatures are there. We just don't see them. So to see something, you have to have the right instruments. Just like the scientists, they say there's no soul, but they don't have the right instruments to measure it. Right? I mean, if you want to weigh someone to see how much they weigh, you don't take a mobile phone to weigh them. That would be stupid. Isn't it? I want to see how much you weigh, the lady cunt, and just like put the mobile phone in front of you. Oh, you have no weight. Because it doesn't register anything. Because the wrong instrument. Anybody who studied science knows there's a specific instrument for measuring specific things, whether it's weight, whether it's temperature, or whether it's the density of air, you know, air pressure, so many things, because science is my background. I know about things like this. And so anyway, so they don't see all these souls. Also, another point is that if someone thinks that the material universes, or most of them are vacant, the planets are vacant, that's akin to atheism. That means they're atheists. Because if you actually believe in God, then you will understand the material world was created for a purpose. In philosophy, the study of purposes is called teleology. So what is the purpose of the material world? The purpose of the material world is to house the living entity. Just like if you go into a prison, let's say the Suva prison here, isn't it? There's probably no empty space in it, right? There's so many criminals, right? And then if there are more criminals, what do? They build another prison. Just like in America, more than 1% of the population is in prison at one time. Actually, we have the most percentage, the highest percentage of people of any country in the world in prison. Pretty good, isn't it? Such an advanced country you're all hankering to go to. And so, you know, so prisons are built and then they fill up. Even hospitals are like that. Prabhupada, that's in regard to what Prabhupada said about mundane charity. Prabhupada said the more hospitals you build, the more sick people will come to fill them up. So in other words, the reason Krishna arranges a specific number of planets, universes, whatever, is because there's need for them, because there's rebellious living entities. Otherwise, why would Krishna create a planet? What's the use of just a planet just hanging there in the air? This is stupid. Krishna is the most efficient. Just like if you have, let's say, a mobile phone. Again, every part of it has some particular use. It's not that the Apple company or what Samsung company, whatever, has put some things in there that are just like no use to them at all. It'd be kind of stupid, isn't it? Because they want to be efficient and have the smallest, thinnest mobile phone available, right? So everything has a particular use. So everything in this universe has a particular use. There's a particular type of living entity is getting punished or rectified or exposed to Krishna consciousness in a specific way. God is behind everything and everywhere. And even Maya has a use. I mean, I was having this argument with someone the other day, and they said, well, the material world doesn't really exist. You know, they're a devotee. I mean, I said, huh? They said, it's all an illusion within our brain. I said, no. I mean, that was like the philosophy I believed in before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, that everything is just like within my brain, and if I don't see it, it's not true, not real. You ever hear that philosophy? If a tree falls in the forest and I'm not there and no one's there to see it, it doesn't actually fall. That everyone's part of my illusion. Like you're all part of my illusion. I just close my eyes and you go away. You don't exist. So, but illusion is my imperfect perception of you. Not that you don't exist. I exist, you exist, but I'm not perceiving you the right way. I'm not seeing you as part and parcel of Krishna. I'm looking at the body. I'm not seeing you as eternal living entity. I'm not seeing the material world as temporary. I think this material world is permanent. That's the illusion. Nasato vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha. Ubayat api drishto antas twanios tadvadarshabi. Important verse in the Bhagavad Gita that says, the sages have ascertained that those things are temporary, are unreal in the sense, not that they don't exist, but they're temporary. Just like, and those things are continue to exist are real. It was like there was an ancient Greek philosopher who said, you cannot step into the same river twice. It's impossible because the river is flowing. So that's the time factor. You know, this understanding of basic Krishna conscious philosophy. So therefore, if one thinks that there are no living entities in some particular part of the universe, that means God is either not there or he's just a horrible designer. In other words, he's not omniscient, he's not all-powerful, he's not all-intelligent, which are all these things that define God. You know, people just like don't understand who God is. Or he's not all good. You know, some people think, well, God's not good. Other people think God is not all-powerful. But what does that mean for us? Because we're not going to outer space to see entities, hopefully. That means whatever happens in this world is coming from Krishna. If we're an illusion, that illusion is coming from Krishna, but don't blame Krishna for your illusion. Because Krishna is reciprocating with you. You want to forget him. Krishna Bhadhya Mukha. And Krishna, as Prabhupada quotes here, Matak Smritir Yanam Aponam Cha, that Krishna gives you the intelligence and the forgetfulness. So the illusion comes from Krishna. Forgetfulness, remembrance comes from Krishna. Intelligence comes from, everything comes from Krishna. But the only thing that you have some independence with is your desire. That's the one thing. Everything otherwise, that's the only thing Krishna doesn't interfere with, is your desire, what's called free will. So if you want Krishna, then Krishna will give you everything you need to become Krishna conscious. And if you don't want Krishna, Krishna will give you everything you need to be a jackass. Isn't it? That's the nature of God. Anyway, so this is a very important point that's made in this verse, that Krishna is the source of everything. Everything. Hum sarvasya prabhu. That means 100%. Otherwise, Krishna would say, I'm the source of almost everything. But the verse says I'm the source of everything. And another point Prabhupada makes in the purport is very interesting about mundane charity. This has also become a little controversial in our movement. Because, of course, in our movement we have this thing called food for life and other things like that. So Prabhupada here criticizes mundane charity. Of course, sometimes in India they have this whole philosophy of Daridra Narayan. Daridra Narayan means a poor Narayan. That's another type of impersonal philosophy. You see, everybody is Narayan. You're Narayan, I'm Narayan. And there's a poor Narayan who's lying in the street. And then Prabhupada said, there's also Dhani Narayan, there's a rich Narayan. So this philosophy, you know, this mundane charity philosophy, is that you help the Daridra Narayans. But Prabhupada said, we're interested in all the Narayans. Hold on, the Dhani and the Daridra Narayans. That means everybody. And they're not all Narayans, obviously. They're Angsas, Mame Vangsa, Jivaloke, Jiva Bhuta, Sanantana. They're a parts and parcels of Narayan, they're Jiva souls. So we're interested in helping all of them. So if you have that consciousness, there's a problem with the consciousness of just doing mundane charity. You think, it's atheism again, you think that someone is poor just because, you know, just chance. It just happened, just like if you roll dice. Just like our friend Shakuni, he was rolling dice, right? And everyone was thinking it was because of chance. But was it because of chance that Shakuni was able to roll the dice in the way he wanted? No. But everybody else was cheated, right? He rolled the dice, and whatever he said, it came out. What do they call it? Snake eyes? You heard of snake eyes before? Snake eyes means when you get two ones on two dice. See, none of you know these important things. So obviously he had what we call loaded dice. That means he could throw it and it would come out the way he wanted. So it wasn't by chance, even though everyone was thinking. So anyway, so the same way we are thinking, not we, but you know, mundane people are thinking that someone is poor, just the trick of fate, you know, chance he's poor. And therefore, we can save him from that poverty-stricken condition. We're able to circumvent fate. No, it doesn't work like that. If someone is poverty-stricken, they did something in the past. You know, nobody gets a specific birth, a specific situation, without having done something in the past to deserve it. I mean, that's karma. That's Krishna conscious ABC knowledge, right? You know, someone is suffering. Well, they did something. Or if they're a devotee, Krishna's purifying them. That's another funny thing. Like every time a devotee suffers, you just say you're getting purified. You know, if I yell at a devotee, he'd say, I'm purifying you. Don't criticize me because I'm purifying you. I mean, that's a typical thing. You know, if you eat too much and you have some stomach ache, you're getting purified. So we all get purified so much. So, so whatever happens, other than a devotee, you know, someone who's chanting the holy names, then it's he's put in that situation, and you're not really going to be able to relieve that suffering. You give him some food, yeah, But then the suffering still has to go on. You may delay it a little bit, but the suffering has to go on. He still has to suffer his karma. The only way out of karma is Krishna consciousness. You know, one chants the holy names, that really helps him. So mundane charity is bad from the perspective of the person giving it, because he thinks he's able to create someone's good fortune. Of course, a pure devotee can create someone's good fortune. And it's bad from the perspective of the person receiving it, because it's not going to stop their suffering. It's useless. It's completely useless. Whereas spiritual charity, and that's how food for life should be. It's not that we just go out and we give mundane food to people, even mundane vegetables. Mundane vegetables is interesting. Because if they just take, first of all, if we feed people food without offering to Krishna, we're actually committing sinful activity, even if it's vegetables. And Krishna says, one who eats first without offering to me is verily eating sin. So we have to offer the food, distribute to people, then we're actually creating their good fortune by the mercy of His Divine Grace Śrīla Prabhupāda and the other devotees. Then that's actually creating a good fortune. Otherwise, mundane charity is useless. But we should engage in charity. I know in the movement it's become quite controversial. I mean, one devotee was even giving class and he called food for life food for death, because he was criticizing food for life. But, you know, there is charity, and we do. We have this wonderful Food for Life organization that goes around the world whenever there's a disaster or when there's not a disaster, like in the Balkan area. We had some floods, wasn't it? And the devotees just participated and distributed prasadam, and it helped our movement. People respected us more. I mean, it's a win-win. You make people Krishna conscious, you're serving Krishna, you're helping the movement become more respected. That's fine, that particular type of charity. But mundane charity is completely useless from the beginning to the end. Anyway, so this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to give the greatest charity, to bring people to the point of understanding the purpose in life and being free. Ultimately, it's a side effect, but being free from the karmic reactions they would have to suffer otherwise. So, just to sum up what we talked about in class, one, we should see Krishna everywhere, see Krishna in everything, as Krishna says, aham sarvasya prabhavo, both in the universal understanding and also in our personal understanding. Whatever happens to us, it's Krishna. Krishna doing that. And don't blame the person who did it. Don't get angry at the person who did it. Blame Krishna. No, don't blame Krishna either. But understand, Krishna's doing it for a specific purpose. Nothing happens, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. Very, very important. Even in Christianity, they teach like that. Not a blade of grass. So God has a purpose. There's a purpose behind every single thing that happens. First point. Second point, we should engage in Krishna conscious charity and help others come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so that's all I'm going to say about this. So any questions or comments about any of these points? That the universe, living entities, charity, God being in charge of everything, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, all good. Any questions? Yes, doctor.
Yeah. And they are suffering so much, and I just wish that they die rather than they suffer so much. It's hard to perceive sometimes the level of suffering that they go through.
A tremendous amount of suffering, yeah.
And why sometimes so much?
It's to teach them a lesson. It's all. There's nothing that happens that doesn't have a reason in this world. And, I mean, it's really intense suffering, and we should feel compassion, and you should somehow or other try to slip a little bit of Krishna consciousness. You know, maybe when you give them an injection, put some Radha Kund water in it or something. I did that with my grandmother, not an injection. She was getting ready to die, and, you know, I really couldn't give her too much Krishna consciousness because she was a stubborn old lady. So she was drinking her tea, and I waited till she turned her back, and I put some Radhakund water in her tea. And she turned around, drank it, and I was so happy. So there's ways to give people, like, I have one disciple in the UK, and she works as a social worker. And obviously she can't preach to people, or else she'd be without a job. So she just has this plaque on her desk, and she gives out these little cards saying, "Chant Gauranga, what's the magic word?" So everybody thinks she's really eccentric. But she also gets everyone to chant Gauranga. So there's ways. I mean, even if they can't say Krishna, I mean, that would be a little radical. But, you know, Gauranga. Or you can have your patients call you by your spiritual name. Dr. Rupanuga. You know, so anyway, there's all sorts of ways you can slip in Krishna consciousness. And then you're alleviating them from their suffering. Another thing you could do is be, you know, empathic. Instead of telling them, like sometimes devotees go to the hospital and they tell a person, "You're not your body." The person's in pain. Oh, "You're not your body, Prabhu. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead." And the poor person goes, "Ah." And then finally the Christians come, they're a little empathic, so the person decides to be a Christian. So, you know, we can be, you know, empathic to people who are suffering, and then people become more favorable to Krishna consciousness. But we definitely don't want to hide the fact completely that we're Hare Krishna devotees. Like when Vishwanath takes taxes from people. You can say, you know, give some money for Krishna. Anyway, so we have in one country, it's very interesting, in Hungary, the government allows people to elect to take 1% of their taxes and give it to a religious organization. Did you know that?
In Slovenia also, half percent.
0.5% in Slovenia. Certain countries like that. The government allows, you can put on your tax return, "I would like a certain percentage to go to of the tax instead of going to the government, go to religion." So in Hungary, they get 1 million euros a year from the government. So maybe that can be arranged in Fiji too. You change the law. And then we should do some propaganda. Everyone should elect us. Do you think that's possible? You're in charge. I mean, you could. It's your decision. you're the minister. I mean, whatever. CEO, whatever. Anyway, so somehow or other, we should try to slip some Krishna in. I mean, just like yesterday, we were at Ma Singh's house, and then we were talking, and we saw some, you know, native Fijians there, and I was very happy, and I was explaining things in such a way they could understand it. Instead of, you know, when I was talking about the Mahabharat, instead of saying devotees and demons, you know, I said godly people and demons. And I explained it, you know, try to sort of like explain it close to the Bible so they could really relate. I said, you know, godly people and demons, they're always fighting. It's like the devil and God. I explain like that. So we have to become expert enough so that people can relate to us and hear a little bit of Krishna. Maybe not the whole thing, because it's an offense to preach the glories of the holy names to those who are faithless or those who may misuse the information. But we have to be that expert like that. And so somehow or other, when you feel, I mean, obviously you're feeling compassion for your suffering patients, then somehow or other, give them some Krishna consciousness, you know, even trick it in a trick. You know, here's some nice water to drink. This is special water. Didi's remnants. or a tulsi leaf or something that's offered to Krishna. Anyway, yeah, actually Lord Chaitanya had devotees who were doctors too, like Murari Gupta. And Murari Gupta was expert, it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, at curing both material and spiritual diseases. All right, so any other questions or comments? Gargamuni? You mean for devotees?
I mean for everyone. You know, if it is predetermined, then you cannot do anything about it, and then...
Your suffering and enjoyment is predetermined in your lifespan if you're not a devotee. Let's just take the two things. One is, if you're not a devotee, it's predetermined. So, if you don't get one disease, it'll be another. In other words, you can prevent some disease like polio, and then you get some other disease. I mean, because your suffering and lifespan is predetermined. So, but for devotees, and also the material energy works in a certain way. For devotees, they can use medicine to avoid getting certain diseases or to alleviate pain, because the material energy functions in a certain way. I mean, there are germs, there are viruses. There are germs and there are viruses. And, you know, if you jump off the building, whether you're a devotee or not, you're going to get smashed like that. So the material energy works in a certain way. So a devotee can actually, another point is, even though one's a devotee, one can cause more distress to themselves by being foolish. Like Prabhupada said, when devotees got in a car accident and died, because they didn't sleep or they fell asleep during the driving, Prabhupada said it was their foolishness, it wasn't Krishna's mercy. So we can create problems for ourselves too. So we should take advantage of modern medical procedures insofar as possible. I mean, not too much. Not that we should go to Rupanuga and say, you know, please prolong my life just like 3 more months. I have so many plans. And therefore, Rupanuga puts a new heart in our body, or a new, what else can you put in? New brain. You know, at a certain point, just like you have these advanced healthcare directives, what's called do not resuscitate. You've heard about that before? No. Do not, it's a directive you give that if I come into a coma and you can't, and it's the brain dead, just let me die a natural death. Don't keep me alive, you know, artificially longer. Let me go on to my next body, at least. Anyway, so yeah, the material energy does function in a certain way, and devotees can avoid diseases. And even non-devotees can avoid diseases, but their suffering will continue in a different way. It's just like, you know, 6 of 1, half dozen of another. You understand what I mean? 6 of 1... Half dozen. What's a half dozen? 6. So it's the same thing, just in a different scenario. You know, let's say I avoid cancer or something like that. Because let's say I'm a non-devotee, avoid cancer. Okay, avoid cancer. And then someone comes up the next day and points a gun in my head and shoots me. So I haven't avoided the distress. I've just like put it off a little bit, or had a different type of distress. You can't, it's built in. I mean, like the amount of breaths you have, if you're a non-devotee, not devotee, if you're a non-devotee, the amount of breaths you have is just like built in when you're born. You have a certain amount of breaths, you know, 10,990,000, anyway, you just count like that. It's like an hourglass that you turn over, the sand is running out. But if you're a devotee, your life is prolonged. But it's up to Krishna. You're directly in Krishna's hands, whereas you're non-devotee, you're in the hands of the mechanistic material energy, Durga, who actually just gives you the results of your karma. So we have not avoided misery by material science. We have substituted one misery for another. Just like we talk about in America, for example, that we've cured most of the infectious diseases, at least dealt with them. But the lifestyle diseases are worse. Everybody understands that? There's lifestyle, infectious diseases, I mean, practically nobody gets polio anymore. Okay. But practically 50% of the country has diabetes. And many people have to get there, even, especially here in Fiji, diabetes is rampant. So maybe someone doesn't get dengue fever, so instead they get diabetes and have their leg cut off. Right? So one way or other, the material energy will get you. It's like the mafia. You can avoid the mafia one day, but they'll shoot you the next day. They're going to get you. You can't escape Durga. She's everywhere. So when it's time to go, it's time to go. Anyway, so we just chant Hare Krishna. We don't worry about these things. I mean, devotees don't even worry about horoscopes. Prabhupada was not worried. He had horoscopes done, but Prabhupada said, let's hear the horoscope, let's have a good laugh. You know, so, but sometimes devotees get so much into these horoscopes, it destroys their lives. There's actually one book published by a very nice friend of mine, How to Destroy Your Life with Astrology. She's an astrologer, but she tells you how many astrologers destroy their life, your life. You know, they'll go to you, and let's say they go to a husband and wife, and they say, I see this marriage is not going to work. I see you're going to find the person of your dreams, and your husband is not the person of your dreams, except for your nightmare, that dream. And so they put this suggestion into people's minds, and then, of course, the wife looks at the husband like, oh, he's a demon. He's actually a good devotee, but he's a demon. Because of the power of suggestion, and then everything gets finished. So that's why we don't bother with these astrologers. I mean, maybe when you're arranging a marriage or something, before the marriage, not after the marriage. After the marriage, forget about astrology. Before, it's useful. That's funny. You know, why do I have so much spiritual trouble? You're going through the Saturn period, Prabhu. Oh, that's why I can't chant my rounds. That's why I'm smoking marijuana and drinking kava. This is my Saturn period. And then a few years later, I'll become a good devotee when it's time. Nonsense. Devotee doesn't have to function under those laws. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to divine grace, Srila Prabhupada.